Some days we both had to walk out.
Yeah.
Some days they work, some days they don't work. May work for a couple of months, and then the next couple of weeks they don't work.
I think there's definitely a lifestyle before CBIT and after CBIT. But, you know, our journey got really tough in January, where we had every day was a really bad day. And we were like, it couldn't be worse. And then tomorrow it was. And I think during that time, when we really had no idea what was causing all of this, we tried to keep calm and find little things that worked and said, okay, this worked this time. It might work next time and it might not, but we need to collect our bag of tricks so that on the bad days, we can throw our tricks out.
Welcome to The Uptick, brought to you by the New Jersey Center for Tourette Syndrome and Associated Disorders, empowering children and adults through education, advocacy, and research by sharing the stories and experiences relevant to the TS community. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Uptick. I am here today with Rena and Maggie LaSalle from Louisiana, and they are the parents of a boy with TS. They've had a really interesting journey with their son, Liam, and his recent diagnosis. Both of you have been so proactive in learning about TS and ensuring your son gets the support that he needs. Our focus today is on lessons and insights for successfully raising a child with TS. Now, I got connected to both of you through an occupational therapist that your son works with. And I think a lot of our listeners may not know about OT, occupational therapy, and how this can be a helpful resource for people with TS. So to kick off our conversation, could you share a little bit about the work your son has been doing with his occupational therapist?
He's been working with his OT, Dr. Jan Rao, on ways he can manage his body throughout TS. You know, since occupational therapy is about functioning in your life day to day, using your mind and your body to function through this is paramount. So she's able to watch his body language and listen to his descriptions and then use physical or mental strategies to diffuse the intensity of the situation. As you practice these strategies over time, they become a reflex for those intense moments. And it's something that you can go to maintain control over what you want your body to do in the moment.
Anything you'd add to that?
With him working with Ms. Jan, she was also able to help us figure out things he's trying to say. It helps us learn these strategies where in at home we can say, okay, what would Ms. Jan do? And try to practice the same things that she does and try to recognize those moments or those triggers or these leaky breaks that we may see. And if we have questions for new things, we'll reach out and ask her. But it really helps Liam be able to manage when we stay on top of what we do as parents by monitoring and looking at how full his cup is and how often he may practice these strategies, whether he likes to or not or wants to. I definitely think our role as a parent is staying on top of it for him. That way, if we need to go to any kind of refreshers with Ms. Jan, you know, we're not starting from scratch.
Can you talk a little bit about what the occupational therapist has worked with Liam on? Like, what is he learning to do when tics are getting bad or when he feels that kind of, you know, the premonitory urge, the stress of work, all of that coming on?
The whole idea of the CBIT therapy is to find what bothers you the most, because whatever tics bothering you, you can really hone in on that feeling and figure out what it is. So by watching and talking about the feelings that are happening in the body language at the beginning of the tic, you're able to find what starts it. So it's kind of like the beginning of a sneeze. If you stop it at the beginning, it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So once you recognize what happens at the beginning, you oppose that and continue to do that until the feeling has passed.
Yeah, with the CBIT part, I think of like the premonitory urges I get before I tick. Sometimes I might find my body is like tensing or I'm in a bad posture, and it's really the stress on my shoulders that I feel like it comes out in like my physical presence before the tick and then during the tick. So things like that, it sounds like they would help me understand that and like recognize when I'm feeling that way before the ticks get really bad. You know, that could mean I need to go for a walk, I need to go chew gum, I need to go get some water, like, you know, have a moment to myself, something like that to kind of recover from that. Is that the idea?
Pretty much. You can use the strategies for that relief in the moment, but also practicing them increases how much they work. Kind of like practicing a sport, right? You might be able to make a basket, but you make more baskets the more you practice. Mm-hmm. So the more you practice those strategies, the better they work in the moment.
The idea of CBIT is, it's a few things. There's mindfulness, there's some breathing exercises for relaxation, but the core of it is around developing like a competing response, something that you do when you feel that urge to tick, that premonitory urge, and in a way, over time can get rid of that urge to do the tick. You're doing some other behavior that's more socially acceptable or less painful or embarrassing or looks more natural, something like that. And you do that behavior instead of the tick. And easier said than done, and takes months to really get good at it. But that's kind of the idea of it, is developing this competing response that satisfies the urge to tick without doing the tick itself. And I know another big emphasis in the work that Liam is doing is around building emotional intelligence, being able to understand his own emotions, how he's feeling. Would love to hear if you can speak to that piece of it and how you've seen him grow and develop in emotional intelligence as working through his work with his therapist.
It's definitely been quite a journey. Liam's always been able to express things in a different way other than like verbally, like he would do something funny and kind of shrug off or like push off whatever this feeling was. So it's kind of like he was deflecting it and pushing it away as if it's not happening. And the more that would happen, you know, then we'd be like, well, I want you to tell me what's going on because I want to be able to help you as your mom. You know, and if you can't tell me, I don't know how to help you. So when we go to our therapist and the work we do at home, it's constantly, how was your day? Tell me what you're feeling. And it's okay if you're angry. It's okay if you're frustrated or sad or mad or you got this horrible feeling in your that you're thinking of, this horrible thought, you know, because it's natural. We all go through those periods. And to hold it in does no good. It's kind of like when you hold in baking soda and vinegar and then it explodes. You know, and we try to tell him as often as we can, it's okay to share your feelings. We try to be examples and share our feelings, no matter if it's sad or mad or whatnot. But that way we can be that example for him to release those emotions. And it's taken over a year for him to be able to progress where he feels more comfortable and confident telling us these things. But as we see that skill grow, we do see certain triggers get lower. He's definitely putting in the work and the effort, and we're seeing it. His school sees it. His therapists see it. We constantly ask for advice ourselves because we'll get to a point where it's like, okay, he's grown and he's showing this effort and he's telling us our feelings, but we hit a roadblock. How can we overcome this roadblock? What are some alternative words that we can use for him to express his feelings with us? You know, and also giving him the space and not pressuring him as his mom as much as I want to know, you know, giving him that space and say, okay, go take the time for yourself, reset, think about it. And then when you're ready, come back and tell me and I will listen. I'm all ears. So I think, you know, those learning curves from us and with him, we're constantly working together to see him grow. And we do, you know.
I think, you know, when it comes to the talk therapy, I remember the beginning, the whole idea was let's make sure we're all on the same page and everyone understands their role. And I think that once that happened, we saw an amazing difference because he understood that his role was to be the child and our role was to be the adult, but that he also had to be able to speak about his feelings and his experience to receive any help. Being an only child scenario, he doesn't see other children struggle at home. And as parents, we don't need to put our problems on him, but it's important to share our struggles that are age appropriate. So when I have a tough conversation with him, it's important for me to show him that I have the words to tell him how he made me feel, and that's okay, so that he can feel comfortable saying that back. And that's really the biggest part, because we don't have TS. We don't know what tics are like and what premonitory urges feel like. All we can do is read. So he has to be the expert. You have to be the one to tell us, and you have to know that you are the expert and we can support what you're going through, but you have to keep working to find the right words to express what's going on.
And for context here, Liam is in fourth grade, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So very young, and we don't teach this stuff in school, emotional intelligence. I think this is such a huge asset for him to have, and for kids in general to understand how to recognize and also articulate your emotions. Emotional intelligence is one of the greatest skills that unfortunately we often neglect to teach kids. There's been research on this showing that having high EQ is a better predictor of positive life outcomes than grades in school or your IQ or your SAT score. So to teach this to a kid and have them working on it at such a young age is incredible. I keep thinking that when Liam is an adult, he's just going to be at such an advantage for having developed that muscle at a young age, because it really is a muscle. Like, emotional intelligence is something that anyone can learn. It just takes that commitment and practice, and it's a different way of thinking. I want to talk about how you handle the frustrating, tough days when Liam's tics are bad. He's getting stressed out about doing homework. Growing up, I remember working with my parents on my schoolwork. And as someone with TS and ADHD, it could get very frustrating, especially math class. Math was always a struggle for me. My mom would sometimes be explaining a concept to me, and we'd both end up getting very frustrated. I was upset that I wasn't grasping the material, you know, as fast as I wanted to. My tics were flaring. I was getting angry. She was getting angry. And then my mom would say something like, "Oh, Michael, I need to go get some water, or I need to go use the restroom. I'll be back." And what I learned years later, she told me that she was doing that to give me time to calm down and also to give herself that moment to breathe and relax and regain her focus. I'd love to hear if you echo that or how you handle these particularly tough, frustrating days.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, that homework in particular is one of the biggest triggers for Liam. His anxiety just goes through the roof. The thought of
homework at home.
Yes.
Anywhere else, it's okay, but at home, it's not.
Yeah. His anxiety just goes through the roof. The thought of the word, it's just, it's crazy. And we went through, I mean, like first grade, second grade, and even last year in third grade, where it was, why are we doing 4 hours of homework? This is ridiculous. Like, it should take 30 minutes, maybe an hour. It should not take 4 hours. We shouldn't be struggling this much. And he grasped the concept, but to sit down and focus and to put what he knew in his mind on paper was just such a struggle. Kind of like if you asked him to read, he can read it in his head and he knows what the story is about. Ask him to read it out loud and his tics would flare up. And we had no idea what was even going on at that point, but we started seeing these things. And of course, you know, we get frustrated and then we would kind of fuss. And then we started to pick up on patterns, like if we fuss, it's just making it worse. Why is it making it worse? You know, nothing's getting corrected. It's actually just, we're not getting anywhere. So let's take a break. Let's reevaluate how to handle this situation. And we just trial and error, tried multiple different things. I would work on some things, some days like math or reading or spelling. And then if I had enough, Rena would come in and she would work with them. Or sometimes we would tag team in the same day.
We've tried every combination.
We even had one of my sisters who's in the education department down here come in and help with like ELA, which is English Language Arts. And, you know, because it got to a certain point where for me, I just couldn't help anymore. I was like, this is not my subject.
Mm-hmm.
We would see his tics flare up so much that sometimes, yes, certain noises, certain things he did were, They were a bit much. And for us, we were like, okay, we can't let him see us get super frustrated with this and then make him feel like it's not okay that he can't let his tics out. So we would take breaks and we would do the same thing your mom would do. I'm going outside for a moment. Mm-hmm. I'll be back. I'm going up, water the flowers. I'm going feed the cats outside. Why don't you go take a break too? Why don't you go run in the yard and have that moment, you know, do some grounding, take your shoes off. Go build with your Legos, go draw a picture, whatever he needed to do, just you go decompress yourself. And the more we tried new things, we figured out, hey, this is working.
Mm.
And the less we as parents criticized him or tried to correct him so much on things he was doing wrong or not picking up fast enough, we were like, we just need to let him learn at his pace and let's see where that takes us.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we realized if we just let him learn at his pace, he can do this. We would see those triggers go down. Now, with school in general, it started to progress more into the classroom. It, particularly last year, was very rough. it didn't matter what subject it was. It could be his favorite subject. It could be PE. The teachers were seeing it. And we would relay the messages of like, hey, if you try this, it may help. If he relaxes, his tics are going to come out. If you give him a fidget cube or a fidget spinner or something he can play with, these stretchy bands that you put on your chairs where he can wiggle, he'll be all right. Some days we both had to walk out.
Yeah.
Some days they work. Some days they don't work. May work for a couple of months, and then the next couple of weeks they don't work.
Yeah. I think there's definitely a lifestyle before CBIT and after CBIT. But, you know, our journey got really tough in January where we had every day was a really bad day. And we were like, it couldn't be worse. And then tomorrow it was. And I think during that time when we really had no idea what was causing all of this, we tried to keep calm and find little things that worked and said, okay, this worked this time. It might work next time and it might not, but we need to collect our bag of tricks so that on the bad days, we can throw our tricks all out. And if we get all 100 tricks and nothing work, well, let's go cry outside together. You know?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, it is a trial and error approach. And it is, I think I've never raised a kid with Tourette, but having it myself and seeing what my parents did and other families, yeah, you collect a lot of tools in the toolbox and use them as you need to. And then it changes. Yeah, a month later, you know, a few months later, there's a different class he's taking that has different struggles, and or you change medication or whatever happens, and it's like you're almost back at square one.
Time changes, the weather changes.
Yep, he's excited. There's a break coming up in school, summer vacation, or an exam. Or
it's funny that you say, you know, excitement, because he loves math, and he'd be so excited to come home and do some math homework. And we're like, wow, you're excited. Okay, let's run with it. Like, we're gonna have a good day.
Right.
In turn would trigger his tics to come out.
Mm.
And once that would happen, you know, the anxiety of I can't finish in time, I can't do what I want to do, that's something that I like to do. You know, so we would have those times as well. I mean, it's a roller coaster some days, but you just got to try to stay positive and pull those little tricks out.
It's true.
I think that when it comes to living a healthy life, minimizing stress is important. And on a day where the tics are bad, doing the things that are making them worse is not helpful to anybody in the situation. Remembering that none of the tasks that we need to do are more important than that stressful experience. You know, the laundry can wait, the supper can wait, the homework can wait, the bath can wait, the conversation can wait, the cleaning can wait, everything can wait till this situation can diffuse. And once we were able to collectively do that as a family and know that, hey, we're all here however long this lasts, you know, and let's just try to keep this as chill as we can, and we'll do it together. Putting our health and mental health and wellness and that diminished stress scenario as a top priority, it creates the environment for us to work on all of the tools and skills and improve our emotional intelligence throughout all of this.
I know some families have a rule, like when the kid gets home from school, there's no play, no TV or anything until homework's done. Have you tried anything like that? And I imagine in cases like this, it doesn't work well. Like, you have to kind of be flexible. And what are your thoughts on that?
So we've tried. Me, I'm down for whatever works. Like, growing up, when I got home from school, I got a break, I got a snack, I got to go play with my friends out in the neighborhood. Then by a certain time, I came home, did homework, ate, take a bath, and called it a night, right? So my idea was, hey, we're going to kind of do something like that too when Liam gets to that age. Well, we did for a little while and it worked. And then once we realized he was ticking and what they were and becoming more familiar with it, we were like, well, let's try this. We pick him up from school. Let's just go straight to homework, get it done. And then you have the rest of the night to yourself. And it worked for a little while. And then it didn't work. So we're like, okay, well, let's try it the opposite way. We pick you up from school. You have a break. And then you do some homework. We eat. And then you have the rest of the night to yourself. And that worked for a little while. And then it didn't. You know, we have our own challenges. And then, so we're like, okay, what about aftercare in school? You've got, you know, 2.5 hours in aftercare where you can play with all your friends. You can play on the playground. You can try to do some homework if you want. You got your teachers to help you. So you can do both options if you want. And that worked for a little while, and then it didn't. So it's just, you know, we took it day by day, whatever worked, that's what we did, and to make the best out of it.
And now, you know, we've been incorporating our new tools into our day, and it's also part of the school. So we talk about our highs and lows, and it gets a temperature on the day. You know, when he walks out of school to the vehicle, we watch him. And we watch for the leaky brakes. Do we think he practiced his strategies today? Is he smiling? Is he talkative? Checking out that body language, seeing how he greets us in the afternoon, talking about your highs and lows. That little 5-10 minute conversation tells us everything we need to know without asking the questions directly. And that pretty much sets the tone for how we handle getting home. Sometimes a good day means we're going to go outside and play. And sometimes a bad day means we're going to go outside and play. So it's not so much that determines what we do, but how we approach the transition from the end of the work/school day to the home time, because it's really the transitions that trigger him the most. Once mm-hmm. he's settled in a place, he's good. Now change that. And being a child and not choosing when you leave and how you leave, you know, that becomes uncomfortable and causes this transitional anxiety that can just tip the scales at any moment.
Yeah, feeling like you're not in control and now you have to switch and do a different subject or do some other activity. That's a lot. That was a lot for me growing up too, transitioning between tasks or subjects in school. I want to talk about confidence and self-worth. Liam is in fourth grade now. He was diagnosed with a tic disorder in 2021 and then got the Tourette diagnosis earlier this year. With Tourette, self-esteem can be a challenge. We often feel that we're different. We stand out because of our tics. They're embarrassing and can look awkward to other people. The issues with bullying, social exclusion. I'm curious to hear about how you as parents foster an environment where Liam is supported and affirmed and able to build his self-confidence.
Well, I know I was bullied as a child for being dark-skinned in a school of light-skinned people and having old parents that adopted me. So I taught him as long as I've been around about bullies and how it's not a good thing and how the times that I chose to be a bully. So we at least identified that. And surprisingly, rarely did he ever come home with that story of bullying. But what he did have was this phrase he would say all the time. I'm just so sad and I don't know why. And it would come out of nowhere. It could be we just had the most fun. We were laughing and cutting up. And 3 seconds later, he's frowning and I'm just so sad and I don't know why. And we wondered about this for years. Yes. And now we pretty much put the nail on the head that the knowledge of suppressing the tics made him sad. So we've really tried to frame the terminology we use and the way we talk about it as not something with a negative connotation, but it's just something that's a little bit different for you. Kind of like somebody who has to check their blood sugar. Doesn't really change who they are. They just have to do that. I can't chew gum because I have TMJ disorder. I just can't chew gum. It's not a big deal. I'm just a little different. And I told him, I said, you know, I will stop and have a break dance break with you anytime. So we'll like this and suddenly, you know, And you know, calling it something that he's just a little bit different or that it's a superpower. And also try to take the skills you use in TS and explain that it's not just for people with TS. Here's how someone without TS uses that same strategy. So you're not alone in this strategy. All humans use it. You just have to learn a little bit younger.
It's a life skill, yeah.
Totally. And I think that's the big thing is, what skill can we teach him now that will last forever and it will just help his childhood be that much more enjoyable?
Yep.
I love that. Just your whole attitude and outlook on this as being a difference rather than like a diagnosis or clinical, you know, problem is beautiful.
Or disability. I hate when they use that word.
Disability. Yeah. And the dis part just makes it, oh, there's something wrong with me, you know, and we internalize that at a young age. So really applaud you on efforts to normalize this. And yeah, like you have this thing, it can be a superpower. It can also be a challenge at times. And you have to be aware of how it affects you and others and take charge of it. That's amazing for someone so young to be learning. Has he been able to find a friend group, get that social support in school? Does he feel connected?
With the school we're at now, yes, definitely. You know, we had originally started him in public school and that was just nuts.
We had ups and downs.
Yeah. And then when we had our worst down period with that, we switched to a private school and loved it. Absolutely loved it. We got to walk to school every day and enjoy those moments. It's a small private school, so everybody knew everybody. And it was like a big family community over there and had a lot of support from the principal and the teachers until third grade, which I'm not going to say that it was bad, but they were not fully aware of what his challenges were. Now we quickly updated them. And as we saw, this was like the worst year so far. They just weren't equipped to handle it. They wanted to, but they just did not have the resources or the staff, being that they're private school. They're not required to have that. So we're like, okay, here's our hard decision. What do we do? Do we homeschool and, you know, find these alternatives to keep him involved socially and keep friends and things like that? Or do we find a homeschool-based program where it's a group of kids that get together throughout the day? Or do we put him back in public school? And for me, it was like a no-go with the public school, just because I knew he would not have, he would not be, help me out here.
I'm thinking of how the public school and private school system creates a space for you to fit in. Right. And if you don't learn that way at their speed, at their pace, you don't feel like a success.
Right.
And we found a school that creates a space around him to learn the way that he learns and do that for all the students there. And it's a private school, but everyone there is excited about helping children who are a little bit different still gain the skills to be a successful part of society and go to college if they choose to. That environment in itself is wonderful. Liam doesn't have to fit his round peg into a square hole because it just doesn't fit. That school told us today, we don't even remember what our school was like before Liam.
Does he disclose his tics to classmates? And how does he feel about that, like his comfort in disclosure?
Usually you'll hear him say, that's just my tics. And that's kind of how he's always talked about it. There are times that he's more proud to explain and other times where he's just nonchalant. You know, that's just my
tics.
The work we did in the beginning was making it normal and giving him the phrases to say in those moments. We want those answers to just flow and let it be normal. And I think that's kind of how we make decisions on how to approach things. How do we normalize this so that it looks normal, sounds normal to other people, but also feels normal to us?
Mm-hmm.
What advice do you have for parents who just found out that their kid has TS? Say they just got the diagnosis, they're feeling a little nervous about it, not sure what it means. What would you say to them?
I would say the fear comes from the unknown. And when you first get the diagnosis, there's something you think it means in your mind, and you know that what's in your mind is not right because that's not what you're seeing in front of you. That unknown feels very scary. And for a lot of people, when researching medical things, that is equally as scary, or if not more scary. And what I find with TS is there's so much information and it's a lot to digest. Take that at your own pace. Learning it faster doesn't mean that it gets easier faster, because you could read every piece of information tonight and you're only going to retain 1% tomorrow. But if you read 1% for 100 days, you'll retain a lot more. So just take it bit by bit. Approach it as learning a different approach to mental health or cooking a different type of cuisine. It's all skills and tools we already know and use. We're just using them a little bit different. Little bit different mixture, a little bit sooner.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, the more you educate yourself and take it at your own pace, because it is quite a lot. And we've been doing this since he was diagnosed with his tic disorder. My first thought was there's no way he's got TS. No way. Like, he's going to outgrow this, right? And the other half of me was like, well, what if he does? My advice to a parent would be, don't be afraid to start wherever you need to start. You may be in the wrong spot, or it may not be something that 100% pertains to you or your child, but don't be afraid to learn it, because when that door opens, then another door opens and another door opens, right? And also get a good support system.
Mm-hmm.
Build a good support system with school, your community if you can, friends, family, and your partner, the person that you're with, because there's going to be days where one's had more than they can take and the other one has to pick that up, right? And then there's going to be days where you're both just at your wits end with it, but you both have to be able to bounce back and say, okay, look, I've got this, you know? So that support system is definitely a big help. And not only for that child, but for you as well, because you can go and vent and create your own safe space.
It is a team effort. I'm curious, given that you all live in Louisiana, and what your experience has been like finding those professionals, the physicians, the therapists, what advice do you have to other folks that may be, you know, not living near a major city? How do they navigate this? And what tips have you learned?
Well, here's a healthcare pro tip. All right. This is what we all do in healthcare. You ask your coworker who they would see. I called a pediatric nurse friend of mine and said, this is what's going on. Who would you send your kid to if you were in my shoes? And ask a couple of people that question. We got our GP, one of the GPs who suggested is our GP, who also happens to have tics. Had no idea.
Wow. It is more common than people realize. Yeah. I mean, a minimum of 20% of kids have some tics while growing up, and sometimes it doesn't go away. One thing I hear a concern from parents is around medical insurance coverage for things like CBIT. For a family that is looking to get something like CBIT covered by medical insurance, what advice do you have for that?
When it comes to healthcare and insurance and the amount that it charges, there's a whole level of services and tiers. So seeing a physician is a higher tier than seeing a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant than seeing a nurse. So when it comes to a psychologist and an occupational therapist, you have that same hierarchy. The psychologist is the physician and the occupational therapist is the therapist, a tier lower. What happens is the services in general, you charge less and reimburse less. And we know insurance companies, the less they pay, the more they're willing to sign up. So that's kind of how it works. It's a less intense therapy, and it can be provided by someone that has the skills and knowledge to perform it. And a psychologist observes the body language and the language in the whole person, just like an occupational therapist does too. So it's really neat where those two branches can come together to create the same outcome, but it be more affordable and accessible. The most important thing we learned about CBIT and not being covered and successful, you know, is important. And there were options about CBIT being available online and all these options. And is that the right thing? And I struggled with that thought for a while. It can work virtually. What that's going to take is a lot of being able to describe the feelings, you know, that verbalizing of what are you feeling? Where are you feeling it? And being able to demonstrate your full body language to that person. But then also that person having enough CBIT experience to pick up on those things and work with you through it. I find that through that, you also get some skills that you can repeat. So to get a new strategy, you don't have to go back to CBIT. So once you learn how to do it with the tics you have, you can probably continue to keep it up if you're able to gain the skill. So there is this thing of you can't just go to one CBIT session. It's 8 sessions. And I'm sure that's scary to a lot of people. But at the end of those 6 to 8 sessions, you have the skills and now you can take it and run with it. OT will most likely be covered if your insurance covers additional therapies, for sure.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Yeah. And a lot of people have insurance plans that don't cover mental health or it's very limited and stuff. So this can be a challenge for families to find someone that is A, good and experienced in TS and CBIT for it, and B, also covered by their insurance plans. Any other things that come to mind that you really want people to know or anything you've learned in this experience that you want people to take away?
I think from a parenting perspective, the parts of our mind that we dig into when we try to parent comes from some natural instinct and some experience of our childhood and some way we think, I'm not going to be like our parents. I'm going to be like somebody else. But then when you're hit with something that you have zero experience in, it just really throws a monkey wrench in the whole thing. And you're just trying to grab an angle. It's scary because it's uncomfortable, but you find it. I don't know when I found it, but you feel, you're like, oh, wait, I found it. Like, you realize it after the fact. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of taking it one day at a time and taking it one step at a time and never giving up on learning more.
Right.
Because the moment you stop trying to learn more, stop trying new things, or stop trying to hold yourself accountable, that's the time where things become uncomfortable and scary.
Absolutely.
Wake up every day and do it. And then it makes every day the best day it can be.
Yeah. Be comfortable with the uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
That is the nature of the beast here. Yeah. Being comfortable with ambiguity, with having to do trial and error with all these approaches, with you think you found something that works and then a year later it stops working. It is an ongoing journey and continues into adulthood as well. But hopefully by that point, he's developed the skills to, you know, through CBID and therapy to tackle a lot of that on his own. Well, this has been really great. I'm so happy I got to have you on the podcast. Thank you again for being a part of this. Thank you for listening to The Uptick, brought to you by the New Jersey Center for Tourette Syndrome and Associated Disorders, empowering you to stretch the boundaries to live your best life. The NJ Center for Tourette Syndrome and Associated Disorders, NJCTS, its directors and employees assume no responsibility for the accuracy, completeness, objectivity, or usefulness of the information presented on this podcast. We do not endorse any recommendation or opinion made by any guest, nor do we advocate any treatment.